Prime Time Replay from Money FM 89.3. Career 360, hosted by Howie Lim and Bernard Lim, only on Money FM 89.3.
Now, non-compete clauses are commonly found in employment contracts. Typically, a non-compete clause prevents employees from plying their trade or skill or engaging in businesses in certain markets and geographies for some period of time.
And do they hold up in court? And how fair are they to employees? This is what we'd like to know. Well, we'll talk to Mumtaz Zainuddin, who is a partner at the IRB Law, to find out. Well, Mumtaz, tell us, what types of non-competes are there for employees and for businesses?
There's a few types of non-compete. Generally, the most common one is just to say after you leave employment, you are prevented for a particular time to compete from to join competitors that will allow you to compete for a business. Those are your standard restraint of trade clauses.
Yeah.
Recently, we've had a few more clauses come up. In particular, there is one that came up about 5 years ago. It is a forfeiture clause. So how it works is basically it says, if you leave my employment, I will forfeit part of the bonus or whatever that is due to you.
Okay.
And the courts have read this in specific scenarios if it actually is trying to prevent you from leaving employment or prevent you from getting what is already accrued to your bonuses that have already been declared, then it actually effectively works as a restraint of trade. So those are some clauses. It may not look from the start to be a restraint of trade or non-compete, but in essence, when you read the clause, it has the same effect. It's trying to stop an employee from joining another business for a period of time.
By withholding money, almost.
Yes,
yeah?
Yes. Okay. So it's a forfeiture clause.
So almost right. Like you're given a bonus and then you can't claim it when you leave.
Yes, when you leave and you join my competitor. So it actually works in the same way.
Oh, it actually puts specifically if you join my competitor or if you just leave, period.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it has, so the courts have defined this to be very different from loyalty clauses. Loyalty is you stay, we'll give you a bonus.
Sure.
So those are additions, but when you restrict someone from getting what they should get under the law, then you're trying to restrain them from doing something they're legally allowed to do, which is leave employment and join market. Yeah.
Okay. Are there non-compete clauses between businesses?
It actually usually doesn't exist, but I have in my experience seen some clauses which gives rise to part of that, which basically they say if you leave employment and you join another company that's a competitor, you need to bring this clause to your employer's knowledge, and we are entitled to go after you or your employer because both of you are now in breach of this clause.
Huh?
Yeah. It's very weird. I usually I've never seen it litigated in court personally. I have always given the advice, no, it cannot be a case where you bound someone that's not a party to the contract.
Correct.
Yeah. So, but we have seen many ingenious, creative clauses that come up in my years of advice. So it's becoming more and more creative, especially for certain industries. I have noted that it's usually in the sales industry, IT industry. The non-competes are very interesting. In fact, just this morning I did one. Just this morning I did one where my guy was in sales industry, and the non-compete was so interesting. It basically stopped him from competing around the world. It basically said in any of any of the countries that our company has business in or plans to have business in.
Oh wow!
That covers everywhere.
That covers everywhere, right? I don't know what that
covers. It covers crystal ball gazing too, you know, right?
Yeah.
What hasn't happened may happen,
exactly.
But I think it will happen, so let me just put it in the clause as well. That's awful.
I think this non-compete clause issue is something that many of us grapple with. We were a bit unsure, so we just want to ask as many questions as we can. We also know that there's an increase in inquiries with regard to the clauses. I mean, what are some of the questions that are being asked, and why do you think there's an increase?
Okay, I personally believe as Singapore becomes more economic driven, we are going to basically employing a lot of foreigners as well, a lot of IT professionals that have come in. A lot of them are expats, and there's a certain practical aspect that a lot of people don't understand. When these foreign employees, especially expats, are being retrenched, they have to leave Singapore within a period of time.
Their
employment pass, S pass. So they are very eager to find another job.
Right.
So non-compete actually affects them immediately because they can't even move on to another employer. So I see a very marked increase in a lot of foreign employees coming to inquire before they tender, before they get terminated when there's disciplinary issues, to just ask me immediately, look, can I go ahead and join someone else? Because I need to know. I only have 1 month to leave Singapore after I tender or after I I get terminated. So you see a very marked increase in this because more businesses are having it, more employees are being affected, and the reality is it really affects their livelihood, their past in Singapore.
Sure.
So you see quite a high number of it. The other reason that I see a very high number of it, I think, is because market is very bad. We have to admit that economy is not doing as well. There's a high rate of unemployment. Therefore, restraint of trade clauses, they impact that even more. Because now, we're not only able to compete with competitors here, we're not able to compete with competitors overseas because of the restraint of trade. It's geographically so wide. So you see a lot of people panicking. Everybody wants legal advice on it. I see maybe 5 a week. It's almost one a day.
Wow. Yeah. One a day.
That's quite
almost. Yeah. So we see quite a bit, and it's always around restraint of trades, non-competes, or some of them settlement agreements. They've settled a particular payment, but inside the agreement, there are certain clauses that looks like a restraint of trade clauses.
Okay. Yeah.
This sounds like, though, in the first example you cited of our foreign colleague, let's say, right, that you should sort of read your fine print before sign, instead of, oh, I'm going to resign, hence, what can I do to escape, Muntaz, right?
Yes, it's unfortunate. We still have the situation where people come to you after the problem arises. If I could be positive, I would want people to come to me before they sign agreements. Yeah. Then I can tell them, look, this is what's going to happen, what you need to negotiate
but
on.
I know you're not an HR practitioner. How nice would it seem if I brought a lawyer in with me to, you know, the interview process or the letter signing process, so to speak, to look through quickly the contract with me?
Yes, so I happen to be a bit practical on that as well, and I agree with you. A lot of goodwill is lost when lawyers come on board. That's the reality of the situation.
Yes, correct.
Even if you've already joined and you're trying to leave. So in my cases, most of the time, I tell my clients, look, I can give you a consultation. I'll tell you how it works, but you need to negotiate this on your own, because I can tell you once lawyers come on board,
you'll be unfriendly.
It'll be very difficult.
Yeah, it'll be unfriendly.
Yeah, so what I do is I don't come on board immediately and say I represent this guy. I tell them what it is, what they need to negotiate, what's good, what's bad for them, and then I tell them, you go ahead with it. Only in the cases where we've been told that they're going to take up action, then I formally come on board and protect them.
Yeah. So it's a pretty common practice, right? It seems like these sort of non-compete clauses, we always just thought it was in certain industries.
Yeah.
Is it more prevalent in certain industries and sectors though?
It is. I've noticed most of my clients tend to come from sales, IT, most of the frontliners. And I think because the idea is that the companies are worried they will take away customers when they leave.
Yeah.
They're front-facing.
Right.
You see quite a bit in physiotherapists, doctors, dentists, a lot of front-facing work where the clients relate only to that particular person. So they're worried that when you go, and especially you join a competing business, my clients will leave with you.
Okay, the next question I want to ask you, how enforceable is this, Mumtaz? I mean, what happens when one is breached? What happens?
Slightly complicated. Basically, slightly complicated. In Singapore law, at least, non-compete is basically unenforceable from the start. It is the burden of proof for employer to prove that they have a legitimate interest to protect, which is why most non-compete only applies to those that are in very senior position. Because you have to prove you have an interest to protect. If this person joins a competing business, your interest is affected. So that's the first. You have to prove legitimate interest. And then you have to prove that that clause is reasonable. And reasonableness, there's a lot of issues with it. It's a very factual inquiry, which is why for every client that comes to me, I say, come and meet me, give me your background, tell me what you do, show me the clause, what does your company do? It's very factual. It's not a one-size-fits-all.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on that particular contract, a lot of things can be done by the employer. Some contracts clearly say, if you breach this, I will take up an injunction. Means I will stop you from working in the company that you have now taken a job with.
Mm.
But some of it say account of profits, which means this is very prevalent for dentists, physiotherapists. It says, if you set up a competing business or you join my competitor, you are going to give me all the monies you've earned by breaching that particular clause. So it's account of profits. Whatever that you've profited from this arrangement by breaching it, you have to give it to me. So it's very dependent on what remedy they choose to pursue as well.
Based on your definitions, though, let me give you a scenario, all right? The names of the guilty shall be withheld if the industry is relatively small and the competitors you can name on one hand.
Yes.
And there is high prevalence of people just sort of moving around in this musical chair fashion to these different companies, right? Is it okay for a company to say, a company A, let's say, you can't, for say 6 months, work for company B, and very specific about about it 6 months. But this, unfortunately, is a small industry, and this is the only sort of, those are the only sort of other places one can go and work for.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, 6 months,
it's a long time for some people.
Yeah. And a new employee may not be.
And then there's also this other question. Uh-huh. Anecdotally, we've also talked about gardening leave, where we've heard that, yes, for some places, gardening leave means you're paid whilst you're sort of sitting out your non-compete clause, right?
Correct.
So why is that sort of not as prevalent as we would hope, so to speak?
Yeah. So remember, one of the issues I said is whether the clause is reasonable. Mm. So if the employer proves that there's a legitimate interest to protect, then the second stage is whether it's reasonable. And one of the things the courts do look at to answer your question is whether the employee is being compensated for this particular restraint. So if, let's say, the restraint says you're not supposed to join the employer for the next 6 months, then is he getting paid for that 6 months? Mm-hmm. That's the garden leave. If you're getting paid for the garden leave while not working, most of the time the courts will upheld, yes, I think it's reasonable. Your restraint has not caused you a financial harm. Mm. Sure, it's not put you out of pocket.
Sure.
But in cases where they're not put on garden leave, they're not given compensation,
they're not paid.
Yes, then you tend to lean over to the other side of the reasonable test. Is it really reasonable to hold him this long?
Yeah.
So that's the first one.
And we call it blackout, right?
Yes. So the second one, what you're saying is if, let's say, it's a very small industry.
Yeah.
And let's say you know your competitors and yet you've restrained them.
Mm.
In the reasonable test, there is a two-factor thing. One of the factors is reasonableness for public policy. So then it becomes a court discretion for this particular restraint of trade. Even if I were to consider some of the elements as reasonable, can I restrain this guy from joining another competitor when the business has been so small, when the activity or the competitors around this particular trade is so small?
Mm.
And the answer is, in a few of the court cases, no.
Mm.
It's very unfair to refrain if you have only one or two competitors in that particular industry and his skill and knowledge set is not born from his previous employer. It's a skill and set that's needed for the industry.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the courts have been kind, because the reasonableness of public policy comes in as well to help in this kind of situation where it's a very small industry and there's only a few competitors.
But what you're talking about is examples that have gone to court already.
Right.
Yes.
I'm not sure anyone wants to sort of blaze that trail and be the one to start from industry to industry.
Yeah.
Hypothetically, yes. So very quickly, is there anything an employee can do in terms of negotiating this? Let's say they have been practical and want to, at the start, when they've been given the contract, to sort of negotiate through it.
Yes, so if it's at the start, it's quite easy. Usually as a lawyer, I would tell them, look, you need to negotiate for payment.
Just not with you there, right?
Yeah. Obviously. You need to go talk to your HR or your boss and say, look, if you want to restrain me, you better be paying me for the garden leave.
Right.
Because the idea is that I shouldn't be unnecessarily burdened by this restraint of trade. I should.
How many success stories have you heard coming out of that?
Not too bad, actually. Not too bad. I've had very reasonable employees. employers. On the flip side, I have also advised employers. It's not just employees that I've met, and I've told them the same. If you want this to be valid and, you know, enforceable, you might want to consider garden leave. You might want to consider negotiations. So that's one thing that they can do. The other thing that they can do is, if, let's say, they're already leaving, sometimes we enter into a separation agreement where we say, if you waive off the non-compete or whatever it is, whether or not it's enforceable is a different issue. It's more of a negotiations. You waive it off, I'll give you something in return. For example, I'll agree to serve an additional 1 month of notice. And I have been successful in those cases as well. So sometimes companies remain negotiable. When they don't, that's when the full extent of the law comes in. We send them a letter to say, look, it's unenforceable anyway. So please take your action against us.
And then here that comes unpleasantness again.
Yes.
Right? I wish we had more time to get more tips from Muntas. Muntas Zainuddin is a partner at IRB Law. We've been talking about non-compete clauses here today on Career 360. Muntas, thank you so much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.